Welcome to Growing a Fruitful Brand, where we discuss how to create and grow a brand that makes the world a better place for you, your customers, and your employees. I'm Ben Luters, founder and art director of Fruitful Design and Strategy, and this is my business partner and brand strategist and an author. And on our last episode, we kind of got into his new book, The Caring House, that is coming out very soon. And today we're going to kind of dive into that a little bit more and also kind of get into his new personal brand as well.
Ben, you know, I'd love to know from your perspective, you know, watching me write a book and especially watching your business partner write a book about such a heavy topic. Yeah. How did you experience that? Were you ever like concerned about me? You're like, oh my gosh, this guy's writing a book about two people who lost their dads. Like, is he okay? Yeah. How did you experience this whole thing?
Yeah. That's a really good question, Raj. No, I mean, in a way, like, it's funny. A lot of people, I think, experience me as kind of a really, you know, happy, clappy guy and carefree. But I'm someone I've experienced a lot of grief in my life and a lot of hardship. And I also write, like I mentioned, journaling and stuff. And oftentimes it's the harder, the deeper, you know, those more difficult things that are the things I'm drawn to write as well and to think about. And so, yeah, I wasn't concerned, you know, so much, you know, the content as I understood it, when you were first writing it, you know, just knowing that you are a deep thinker and that you had this, question that you were wanting to kind of flesh out. And then I was also inspired because, you know me, I've always have lots of different kind of creative passions outside of work, whether it be, you know, illustration or writing, et cetera, other things I do with my kids. I just thought it was so cool that you were finding the time, even if it was in the middle of the night. And that did kind of concern me, I guess. I want to make sure you get a good night's sleep. But like, I felt like even though sometimes, you know, you maybe didn't get a full night's sleep, I was inspired by your dedication. I was inspired by, you know, and I'm really inspired by the, just the time, the money and the effort. You know, you've reached out to several different guides in this process. You've invested in those, your own personal money. And even now, as you know, we've, you know, got the actual hardcover books coming out next month, like investing in doing those really, really well. These are going to be like cloth bound with the actual, like, you know, real book jackets and everything. These are going to be like legit heirloom books. And it's so tempting to cut corners on those things. Amazon does a great job printing out really, really cheap self-published stuff. And there's no shame in that. That might be the route I go. I'm not sure for my own book, but I'm really inspired that like you're taking the time to like think through how to do this really, really well. And it seemed to me, like you just mentioned, you know, about this was almost like a kind of therapy on top of the actual therapy in your life. And I could tell that, you know, I could tell that you were wrestling with things and concepts and hard truths and stuff as you wrote this. And I think that's a good thing. So many people, myself included, like to just pretend like, you know, these realities don't exist. I don't like to think about grief and suicide and loss every day. Most people don't, but that is the reality of life, is that there's so much suffering and hardship. And if you just, you know, pretend like it doesn't exist, well, then you're going to be, you know, really devastated and really surprised when it hits you in the face and you can't look away. And so I think you doing that hard work, that discipline of thinking through that and helping others think through that and in a kind of a safe way, like in a story, you know, it's not, you didn't write a, you know, so much a self-help grief, you know, kind of book. But more of like, you know, this is this is someone else's story, right? But we can identify with it. So all that to say, I was really inspired by it, and I still am. And I kind of, as you know, I kind of put a pause on some of the stuff I was doing on my own book to kind of like wait and see how this all shakes out with you, because like you're doing some really interesting things with how you're handling pre-orders, with the, you know, what the decisions you made on how to print the books and your editors and all this stuff. And I feel like I'm getting like this inside look at a masterclass on how maybe to do a book. And so I kind of want to see how it shakes out and then, you know, do whatever worked for you. So it's a little selfish.
No, I mean, I love it. There are a lot of guides out there about self-publishing, and yet I also kind of feel like writing my own, because I'm making some choices that other folks aren't making. Jeff Gones gave me a great advice on going after a better hardcover, and introduced me to my printer. And, you know, what's really interesting is that even just going through that part of the process, I've realized that this book is different from a lot of the self-published books out there. Like a lot of the self-published books out there are genre fiction. So things like romance or sci-fi, fantasy, and those, and you know, those are great books. They serve real good purposes for their audiences. They keep them entertained, and they're some of the most meaningful stuff that you will ever read is kind of couched in these other worlds. The whole point of Star Trek when it came out was actually to deal with racism, but you know, we weren't ready to talk about that. So what we could talk about was, you know, aliens and how we treat people who are different from us. And of course that has pretty obvious implications to, you know, to how we live our lives. I did take kind of a different path with some of the self-publishing choices, but I've also learned really great wisdom from other people who've done it before and know how to set things up and, you know, just follow prescribed paths. Our friend James gave us a lot of good advice on self-publishing that I'm just following for everything that I can here.
Shout out to James Eldridge right there.
Yeah, thanks, James. So, Ben, I'm curious, though, you know, this book, especially when I started writing, we're talking 8 years ago, and so we're actually talking just before I officially joined Fruitful. The book is really different from what our brand was at the time. You know, our brand at that time was a lot of churches and nonprofits, and the book is it deals with considerably heavier stuff. There's no moment where like somebody goes into a chapel and prays and whatever, and it's a little sweary. There's some bad words in there, and were you ever concerned for like our brand, for Fruitful's brand, if, you know, knowing that this book was going to see the light of days at some point, did you ever have any considerations of like, well, I don't know if this is good for me, you know, like good for you? Did you ever have any thoughts about that, or was that just kind of my own insecurity? Because I thought about it all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that, why you would think that. I mean, it's a combination of things, right? Like, I feel like, well, part of it is I didn't really know, like when you started writing it 8 years ago, I didn't know what it was then. I didn't read it.
It's true.
The version that I read was many, many years later, so, and not that long ago. How long ago has that been now? Maybe two?
I think it's probably been three. Yeah.
Gosh, time flies, right? I didn't really know, you know, when you first started writing, I may not have even known. I think I knew you were writing something maybe, but I don't know that I knew what. I seem to remember you mentioning the This American Life and the Sharing Place episode, maybe like when you first heard it. I could be wrong. Time is a tricky thing, and we've done so many things together. Maybe if I had known more, I would have been maybe more concerned. You know, as far as like, you know, the book that you're writing is very different than the one I'm writing. You know, mine is geared more towards, is a children's like adventure book, and there's talking animals, and it's, you know, so it's like maybe something that would be more traditionally on brand for us, or at least definitely for me. But I also like to think that, Raj, that, you know, we're people, right? Like, we have our brand, but I think we also are, we need to be full, you know, fully ourselves as well. And so, you know, there's, you know, obviously there is something special about, you know, our relationship as business owners, and we don't want to do things, I guess, that maybe hurt or, you know, could affect our business brand in a negative way. But at the same time, it's like, you're dealing with really human things and dealing with them in a really human way. And I think that, you know, I don't know. I just trust that people can understand that, hey, this isn't necessarily fruitful. This is Raj. And, you know, yeah, he's part of Fruitful, but like, you know, yeah, there's not a Fruitful logo on the back of the book per se. So, and I want that for myself too. You know, I think that there is like, you know, the book I'm writing right now isn't necessarily like controversial or something, but like, I want to make sure, like, you know, we don't talk about it much on the podcast, but I know Raj and I have differing views on a number of things. There's a lot of things that we talk about in here that we, you know, have pretty much exact same perspective on, or, you know, come to the same agreement on, but like, we could have a whole nother podcast probably where we, you know, debate or argue, or at least, you know, have differing opinions, or, you know, so I think like having the freedom for you to be, to have your own perspectives and make your own choices is really important. You know, I'm a little bit libertarian in that way where it's like, I don't want this like kind of top down control so much, you know, from our business, kind of controlling the way that we believe, the way that we think. And I want there to be, you know, a freedom of expression, freedom of opinion, freedom of, you know, to conclusions as well about reality and truth and what to do. So, you know, again, I'm not the most vocal sometimes about, you know, controversial things, especially on social media, but like, I think that it's important that, you know, we protect that, you know, and, you know, I think that if someone was, you know, like you mentioned, there's some swearing in the book on the first page. It's a very intense scene that the book starts with. I'm not going to give anything away, but like, intentionally so, you know, Raj starts the book with a really gripping scene that, you know, and one thing I told Raj, and he knows I'm not a swearer. I don't really swear. And Raj, you know, only swears when things get really, really intense, I think, but behind closed doors. And I do too, actually, to be fully truthful. We've been through some things in the last couple of years where swears have happened. Okay. Full disclosure. We're not going to do it here, but like, yeah, I'm not going to say they don't, but you know, one thing I said to you, I feel like it was more recently. I feel like you might've asked me a similar question to this more recently in private. And I think what I said was, well, anyone would swear in this situation. This is an intense situation. Yeah. In which it's almost the only response, you know, like, I mean, I said, I'm not much of a swearer, but like, you know, if you're in this kind of an intense and emotional situation, it's like, well, if there ever was a time to swear, this is the one, you know? And so in that way, it's like, you know, I think I said that at that time too, Raj, like, it's not like you're telling people that they should, you know, it's not like a business self-help kind of a book where it's saying, and by the way, Raj Lula thinks that it's a good thing to swear all the time and to, you know what I mean? It's not a, you know, and so I think I read fiction and watch movies, you know, that are fictional, where there's all kinds of things that happen that I don't think are, you know, morally correct or the way that I would live. But it's a story. That's like the whole point. And even though in my book there's not like swearing per se, there's all kinds of people making decisions that aren't good or aren't and that have consequences. You know, it's a story. And so I just don't get too caught up on that. Now, if Raj comes out with like a business self-help book that just tears apart story brand or something like that, and says that like visual branding doesn't matter and it's just a bunch of bunk, and here's why. It's because I, you know, started business with this phony guy named Ben, and you know, like, you know, then maybe I'd be like, okay, this might affect our brand. But if Raj wants to write, you know, fiction from the heart that grapples with difficult things and includes difficult adult themes and stuff like that, Raj Lula is, you know, free to do that, and I'm not too worried about it affecting our brand. And if anything, and more on a personal note, it's like I got to design the cover and I got to help typeset the inside of the book and, you know, create your personal brand that went along with it. And so we've kind of turned it into a fun, fruitful project as well, that includes some of my, you know, my design and branding skills. And so I don't know. I think it's a ton of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks for that. And your support has been really important. You know, there were really only two people in my life who I really had to get sign off from before putting this out in the world. And my wife was the first one, but you were the second one, because, you know, I think one of the things that writing this book has exposed in me was just how fearful I was of other people's opinions. You know, I actually think that that's been part of the reason I've been really good at brand strategy over the years, if I can say that. But it's because
you're really good.
Like, but it's because I've always been anticipating what other people will think. You know, I grew up, you know, as an Indian kid in a class in West Omaha, elementary school in West Omaha, where there was a black kid in my class, an African American kid in my class, but then there were no other people of color. And I even remember, I think it was probably about third grade, maybe fourth grade. There was a kid who came to me and said, he's like, oh, I told my mom that you're Indian. And she goes, oh, he must mean the West Indies, you know, or like essentially like, you know, Native, American or from North American continent, because like it was just so unheard of for this kid's family that you would know someone whose family comes from another continent and like a completely different culture and all those things. And, you know, so it's like being an observer for much of my life has made me good at story brand or good at, you know, brand strategy and kind of anticipating the needs of other people. And so being sort of shoved into whatever small amount of limelight exists here, you know, it's been very, very uncomfortable for me. And so I was really worried about if you would be negatively affected by this, if, you know, because like, I appreciate your open-handedness on these things, but, we know that we've got clients that will not read the book, don't appreciate any art that's not, you know, a Christian film or a Christian book. And, I appreciate that you're open-handed about it, but especially at that time, there was an amount of risk. I think our client pool is considerably more diversified now, and I love that. And not only that, I'm running into a lot more people who hold the tension of the difficulty of life with their own values and are more nuanced people. But, I mean, like I said, you and I both... my own mom asked if you know, she would enjoy the book. I'm not sure your mom or dad would. Maybe they would. But, you know, we've got people in our lives that we care about and that we, you know, we respect, that this book is a bit of a departure from, you know, that community, those relationships, and asking other people to say, hey, here's who I am and here's what I wrote and want to put out in the world. And I'm asking you to respect that, and not everybody's going to. And so I did really, really want your buy-in, your support with this. And you've been so generous and kind in that. But it was scary for me. That was really, really difficult and scary to put myself out there in that way. And part of that is because, I mean, like, you don't know if it's any good when you've written it, you know? It's like,
right.
Why bother making any risk to your reputation if it's garbage, you know? Like, if it's not a good book. And so, not to mention the cost of printing and, you know, all the things that we've done, just wouldn't be worth it if the book wasn't good to start with. So there was a lot of fear, a lot of worrying what other people would think about it. So, like I said, I appreciate you being open-handed about it. And at the same time, you know, I was able to recognize that there was some risk associated with me doing a personal project publicly.
How do you feel about it now, Raj? I mean, do you have those same fears, or have they, because I've been so open about it, supportive, and you've kind of gotten it out there and enough people have read it, does it just feel like, yeah, this is not going to impact us in a negative way? Or do you still kind of struggle with fear of, as it gets out there, what people will say, the first negative Amazon review or whatever, like, you know, what, not that there ever will be, but I mean, I think everyone will get a negative Amazon review or YouTube comment or something. How are you feeling now?
Our friend Dan Cumberland really challenged me on this, and he's said all along that putting this out there will actually be good for Fruitful, good for the business, because people knowing me and seeing my work and seeing that I'm capable of a full-length novel and all those things and marketing it, all those things will just show the breadth of my strengths. And
even if they don't,
I'm
read
starting
it.
To get, Just being, you like, know, well, just, yeah, like, it's not my kind of thing, but
he's got a book.
Yeah. So I'm starting to feel the reality of that, especially as people read it and are responding to it. You know, John A. Cuff talks about how if you get a negative review on your book, just immediately label that one, this book wasn't for that person. This wasn't the right audience for that book. And they picked it up mistakenly, but it wasn't for them. And so that's helpful. But I will say too, like, in the 8 years since I started writing this, I've changed a lot. I've matured a lot. And, you know, writing this book has kind of brought out in me the bravery, the willingness to admit that I have struggled with these things, you know, with so many things that happened, with my sister-in-law dying, with the miscarriages, job loss, all of it felt so private, you know, like you find out about those things in private. And even if you share that it has happened with a small community or whatever, they feel very isolating. Grief almost always feels really isolating. It feels like it's the first time that this has ever happened to anybody in the world, but it actually happens to everybody. And so, you know, sharing these things in public felt very much like, you know, kind of the emperor has no clothes kind of thing, just walking around very exposed. And so that going through this process and kind of maturing and seeing that, the more that I share about this, the more that people encounter this work, the more I realize, how many more people are going through these things. And, and I will say too, like there are going to be tribes of people here. There's going to be a tribe of people who will never get it, who will never get this book, who, don't think that you can be, a person of faith or whatever, if you write or say things like this. And then there'll be a whole other tribe of people who goes, how could you possibly be a person of faith if you don't write or say things like this? How can you really be tuned into reality if you don't struggle with
deal
it?
Deal with reality. Like
And even that piece of it, you know, we haven't talked at all about this publicly, but, you know, my faith has changed a lot in the last decade or more. As you know, there have been so many things in our country and in the faith landscape that have changed. And I've found some environments far less welcoming than they used to be. And that's either because I changed or they did. And I honestly don't know which of the two that is, but
there's some combination thereof, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. And again, those things were very private and they were very difficult to, to admit that I was even going through, let alone that those things were starting to solidify and that, I was having to walk away from communities that I'd been a part of before because I couldn't align myself with, you know, some of the, overtly racist things that were happening in those environments. And, that was hard, you know, that was really, really hard. But now I'm getting to the point where I'm able to say like, hey, I'm turning 40 next month. And a lot of who I am, good or bad, is not going to change a lot. You know, it's like, I want to always be growing. I always want to be changing for the rest of my life. But, I am who I am and I am far too old at this point to be afraid of what other people think about me. I'm always open to correction and coaching and teaching from people who care about me, for people who have invested in my life. But for people who are just sitting on the bleachers throwing popcorn at me, I don't care anymore. Like they've not earned the right to hold that kind of voice in my life anymore. And that's been really, really hard. I hope that there are other artists out there who can benefit from me saying this out loud and that I'm not just some like super insecure person or whatever. But, I'm going to put it out there and I'm even willing now to go, hey, this book represents a period of time in my life. And, this may not even be who I am forever, but it's a time capsule and you can look at it. I'm okay with that now. Whereas going through it, especially going through a lot of the hard grief stuff, took a lot of personal work to be willing to share that publicly.
For sharing that, Raj, because I feel like that's a really good word too for that last part you just shared about how it's a time capsule. It's really interesting because I think you and I both know as creatives, especially when you're creating something that takes a long time and is so personal, when you get to the end of it, you may not identify with that exact moment in time forever in the same way, but I think it's still important to put it out there and be able to say, hey, this is who I am or this is who I was, and be okay with that because we're always going to be changing. And you know, you could probably right now open up the Caring House and rewrite it in a different way, right? In a way that's maybe more true to you at this exact moment. But if we're to always be doing that with everything that you create, you would never put anything out there because it's never good enough, or it's never exactly the way that, you know, that I'm thinking at this exact moment. But because we are always evolving and always changing and there's always new ideas to consider, and so I think that's really important because, you know, I'm sure, the great authors of history were similar, right? Like there are, you know, certain authors that there's like their early works, right? And then there's their later works, and maybe they might have completely reinvented themselves before they died, you know? And I'm sure that version of them as an artist and as a writer, you know, they probably would just roll their eyes at their early stuff. And yet it's still important that we have that. And sometimes those early works are the most impactful and special to others. And so it kind of takes, I think, a level of humility to just recognize that, like, you know, it's not really for you ultimately. Like, this was you and you are sharing a portion of you, but like, this is bigger than you now. And you have to kind of be willing to kind of like release it in the world, let it do what it will do, and then we, you know, we move on to the next thing. We have to, at some point, we have to put that stamp on it that says, you know what, good enough. And
It's good. It's good to be seen.
That's the hardest
now.
Thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
You know, Ben, you mentioned the you know, the logo on the book of my own personal branding, and I, you know, one of the things I learned from you early on when we started working together, I think probably before I even started working at Fruitful in earnest, was that you know, you see all these portfolios from design students who and I guess, you know, mocking up a book is frequently an assignment in design school, but one of the things that you always notice and gives you a clue to whether or not they're observant is that if they don't have a barcode on there, then it doesn't look like a real book. And then one of the other major things is if the book doesn't have any branding, and I happen to have my book right here, or at least the cover.
Can you see
it? Get in focus here. Not having that branding, not having kind of that publisher mark on there is something that makes it very obviously not a published book or a professional book. And so when I decided to self-publish, which was a very difficult decision to make, I wanted it to look like a legitimate book. And then we kind of had this, oh shoot moment of, we're going to have to brand this thing now. And yeah. So, I'd love to hear, you're the branding expert, at least a visual branding expert here. I'd love to hear you talk about, you know, kind of what was the process of us coming up with that brand. And, I know that I'm actually kind of a more difficult customer than some of our customers have been. And I'd just love to hear you talk about that process a little bit.
Yeah, no, that's, thanks for bringing that up, Raj. No, you know, it's funny, you joke that you're the most, you know, one of the most difficult. In a way, like, you do have you had a very specific vision for what you wanted, I think. But, like, I would say you had really good taste, you had really good intuition, and there's obviously the relationship. So it wasn't the same thing as, like, just another client saying they want keep redoing it. You gave very specific feedback that made it better. And it's just funny, you know, when I was looking through the sketches that got us to the final logo mark, I love where we landed, way better than any of the stops along the way. I'm so glad you kept pushing it. You know, I was trying to, you had this very specific thing in mind. And for those of you that aren't, you know, watching or aren't familiar, you know, Lula Publishing, the logo is this kind of iconic Indian elephant, you know, rearing up on its hind legs with, you know, the RL Raj Lula monogram on its back, and kind of reminiscent of, you know, like the penguin, you know, logo, and many other like publishing, classic publishing logos that have an animal in them, a simplified animal. And so that where this comes from, though, and a lot of people listening probably have no idea, but when Raj and I were first kind of becoming friends and collaborators, he was running a photography business called Lula Photography. And one of our first things we did together was he hired me to do his photography logo, which was an elephant, an Indian elephant, in a completely different style. And you know, that's one of those things you look back on it and I'm like, there's a lot of things I would do differently. So I actually kind of saw this as, you know, not that I'm not proud of that mark, and I understand, you know, how we got there, and I think we were both happy with it at the time. But you know, it is fun, you know, many years later, about 10 years later, kind of like getting a chance to rebrand that in a bit. Like, if we were to do the Lula Photography elephant again, how do we do it now? And that was kind of in the back of my mind as a kind of a
opportunity. It was almost a rebrand.
Yeah, that's how it felt. And in fact, if you look at that first sketch, Raj, I mean, I literally started there. I went and took the Lula Photography elephant and I kind of drew over it and like started. That was like my starting spot. Like, okay, what do we, you know, what do we like or not like about this? And that gave you a great place for us to start and for you to be like, yeah, maybe if you did this a little bit, and have you seen an elephant do that? And I mean, I was pulling up so many images of, Indian elephants in different positions. And, you know, famously in the middle of that process, I got very photorealistic, which was a little, you know, that was too far in the wrong direction. we ended up with something more stylized in a good way. But I'm so glad we did the work, and I had a ton of fun. Like, I know Raj felt like he was being difficult the whole time. But, you know, I'm really, really proud of the work. It's one of my favorite marks that I, you know, maybe ever. I mean, I really do like it a lot. I think it's very iconic. And I don't think I'm just tooting my horn. I mean, I think it was just, maybe it was because of the work that was put into it. And because you had such a clear vision, and like, and we knew how it was going to be used, like on the spine of the book, and then, you know, in a pattern on the website and stuff like that. We had like a, you know, and you have, it's funny working with you, Raj, is like, you have such a, like a clear, branding, you know, and getting to know you, you have like a very, on brand, self. I don't know. You like the dark navy blue and your love for, you know, patterns and stuff like this, and incorporated in Raj's brand. I was able to actually use, like an Indian mandala that he actually created himself. And so it was really fun to kind of infuse like your Indian heritage into your brand, in clever ways, that maybe don't make it onto the book, but like on his website and other places. And so I don't know. I thought it was a lot of fun. It's very rare, I feel, that you get to do a personal branding for someone that you know so personally well. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I know you so well, and you know me too, so that like you knew the kinds of things to say to me that would get me going down the right path. And at the same time, I knew when you were saying certain things, you know, what you were really meaning, because I just know you, you know, like having that opportunity, you know, to work with someone that you know so well, was really unique. And so, this was a very much a kind of a side project for a while there. We had a lot of client work that was going on at the time.
Yeah.
I actually had a lot of fun doing it kind of, off hours sometimes, but then, Raj and I took a trip to Chicago to meet with a potential client. And during that trip is where we kind of really, I think, got it going in the right direction, because we're physically with one another. I remember sitting in the airport and like sketching next to you, and you weren't like touching the screen and telling me what to do. But like, it was really cool to like feel like when we came out of that trip, it was like, okay, I know what this brand needs to be now.
Yeah,
and
we were able to talk about it in real time.
Exactly, like that live collaboration, and there was even, you know, a brand in the airport that we kind of looked at, and I knew even before you said anything that this is a brand that really resonates with Raj for a lot of different reasons. And so, I just thought that was very like a very rewarding branding experience because of the relationship, because of how much you cared, and because of, you know, knowing where it needed to go. I don't know. Like, I don't think you're being difficult. I wouldn't say I don't think you're being difficult at all, but I think you were being just the right amount of difficult that you should be for your own personal brand as a professional brander. You know, I would be even more difficult, I'm sure, if I was having to do that with someone else.
Oh man, I can't even imagine.
If I couldn't touch, the pencil, I mean, my goodness, it would be so hard. Yeah.
You know, one thing that was amazing about working together on this was that, I did have, you were able to lead me in pointing out that I had some conflicting direction. I don't think that that's a bad thing. You know, like you were really good in helping me identify it, but not necessarily go, okay, but let's throw the baby out with the bathwater and go like, it's conflicting. You only get one or the other. Because like, one of the things we talked about on that Chicago trip is that I'm kind of a conflict of things, you know, like my dad's from India, my mom's white, she's from America, you know, and so I have this heritage, but like I wrote a book in English, and English, you know, literature has a deep and rich history of its own that has kind of, you know, obviously, you know, British influences and origin and all those things. And so there's kind of all these different things that have like you said, kind of when you combine all of them, are me. And trying to get that out into the world and go, hey, I want it to feel a little bit like a truck that was painted in India by hand, but also, you know, what's funny, we talked about this a long time ago. I don't know if you remember this, but there was a scene in the show The Crown where Lord Mountbatten, which is a great name to say, but Lord Mountbatten,
it's really fun.
His stationery shows up on screen, and I was just like, that. I want that. I want, and so part of the, yes, we were branding the book, but for me, I was like, what's my monogram? What's my thing that I could like put on stationery and feel like that is me? And so that's a little bit what I've been chasing. I've been chasing this for a few years now. You know, we did that one exercise at Fruitful where just to keep all the designers sharp, we did you know, sketches of personal brands for everybody on staff, and we let people kind of weigh in on the things that they'd like to be in their personal brand, all that. And that example from The Crown was actually one of the things that I weighed in on at that point. And so we had all these, like, you know, cool Indian restaurant meets 1940s India meets Lord Mountbatten meets, you know, whoever I am, you know, from the Midwest, and all of these things that I wanted to kind of be in the soup of the branding, but also didn't want to be confused or hodgepodge or whatever. And I mean, I agree with you. I know I'm extremely biased, but I love where this mark ended up. I love that. Yeah. I can feel all these different elements in there, even if it's not immediately obvious to the audience, but the way that we use texture and color and pattern and the way that my personal brand and the publishing brand play together. There's even some Hindi in there that that our friend Nick Fred helped us handwrite, even though he doesn't speak or write Hindi. But we took something that my dad had written out by hand of our family name in Hindi. And then, you know, I found a font on Google that replicated that in the correct, in a little bit more clean, styling, and then had Nick take his magic to it. All of those things made it into this brand without it feeling like just chaos, which would be super easy to do with so many elements. But I mean, yeah, to your point, it was a thing that we were able to work on together because we had had so many years of language and rhythm to go, okay, we know how to talk to each other through these things. And it was absolutely not just a, you know, Raj gets his way on everything kind of thing. It would have ended up a mess if you would have allowed that to happen. But it also wasn't a, I'm the designer, be quiet and listen to me. It was a true collaboration that required a lot of humility on both sides, but also a lot of our best creative thinking and communicating. I love where we ended up with it.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, and thanks for bringing that up, because I am kind of a, we joke about this all the time, that I'm a little bit of, you know, sunshine, and I sometimes, you know, forget difficult things. I'm kind of like a goldfish in some ways, but that did remind me of, like, there were some frustrating points along the way, especially when we were kind of just like, you know, texting each other back and forth, like after work, where it's like, I thought you said you wanted like little etching lines in it, and I did all these etching lines for you, and you're like, oh, it's too complicated. Maybe it needs to be more simple, like this example. And I'm like, but you liked this other example, you know, like that. Mm-hmm. There was like a little bit of like, you know, you kind of had to see it to kind of know what was going to work. But like, you know, I think one of the things that makes it so worthwhile is just exactly what you said, where we ended up. I mean, I think the ends justified the means in this case. But once the means, especially like, I'm kind of, you know, joking there, because like, you know, like I said before, once the means became us working together, you know, face to face, collaboratively, it went a lot smoother. And so, man, I'm excited about it. I'm proud of it.
I do think that that's actually where a lot of the frustration came from in the process, was that because it was a side project, it became you know, we were working very much asynchronously. We weren't really meeting and talking. So I'd give you a little bit of direction, and you're such a powerful artist that like you take a little bit of direction and you go really far with it. And
it's like,
we weren't really
you like it.
We weren't really having the kinds of things that our clients get experience in brand sprints, where like we get that really intense time together and you get a really clear direction, because I was able to see, you know, because I had put together a whole mood board myself, and like I knew why each thing was on the mood board, but then, you know, you know, kind of catching on to some things and going, oh, like you said, the etchings, and it's like, oh yeah, but the etchings aren't exactly what I loved about that. It was more the vintage feel of that. And yes, I mentioned the etchings, but what I really meant was this feels like it comes from a certain time period and not so much, you know, it's not so modern. The edges aren't quite as clean, you know, kind of all those things. It forced me to be a better communicator because as I was seeing the roads I was accidentally leading you down, it helped. But then it also helped us realize that some really focused time together would solve the problem. And thankfully we did get that in that trip to Chicago.
Yeah, no, I'm really happy with where it ended up. And yeah, if people want to check it out, you know, we've shared it on Fruitful's Instagram and LinkedIn. We've shared it on Raj's personal Instagram at Raj Lula. So check that out. And even on my own personal Instagram as well. And you can also check it out on Raj's website at rajlula.com.
You know, I think one thing I would love to say to folks, you know, because we talked about doing personal projects and, you know, side gigs, all those types of things, is that it's okay, in fact, maybe even encouraged, for you not to worry about your company being the totality of you. I think that's one thing that I kind of learned through this personal branding exercise, is that it was funny because even in doing a publishing brand, I didn't want to just have a monogram, like my own personal monogram, on the spine of the book, because it was like Raj Lula, brought to you by Raj Lula. And it's like, well, that's stupid. you know, but something I don't think you and I even talked about much in the branding process was that my family has a deep history in India of doing education. There's schools there and they're called Lula classes. And so to call something Lula Publishing, I was kind of thinking when you were mentioning Lula Photography, we have Lula Publishing, and it's like, wow, this guy gets paid to name things for other people and he can never think of anything besides his own name for himself. But no, these are actually very purposeful choices. The reason why I call Lula Photography what I did was because at that time, it was very, very common for people to have, you know, kind of what I thought were cheesy names for photography businesses, like, you know, Moments Captured or A Stitch in Time or what, you know, just like, and I just was not into any of those things. And I couldn't come up with a more clever, interesting thing than they were doing. Like pretty much every photography pun had been used at that point. And so I was just like, yeah, I'm not interested in doing that. And so I went very simple, very straightforward, especially because I more or less was the brand. In fact, the original brand, as you probably remember, Ben, was that it was Raj Lula Photography. And then when Lindsay joined the business and we started doing wedding photography together, we changed it to Lula Photography. Right. And I literally just in my original logo, which was just a font, I just chopped off the Raj part of it and it became Lula Photography. So by the time you got to it, it was already kind of the second, third brand maybe. And I actually wanted to call this Lula Publishing because it sort of felt like expanding our family's empire, for lack of a better word, you know, but our family's ecosystem of brands into the Western Hemisphere and out of just education into, you know, literature and publishing. And, you know, whether or not it ever publishes anything besides my own books, I don't know or care necessarily. But to me, I was carrying that kind of ancestry into this branding project, which is also why part of the reason I cared about it so much. But for people who, you know, who are thinking about doing their side project, you know, there are so many businesses that we run into who they're like, we sell accounting services and you know, tennis coaching or whatever. And it's like, what? And it's like, well, I used to be a professional tennis player and I made a lot of money doing that. So I became an accountant, blah, blah, blah. And so we sell accounting and tennis, and it's called First Serve Accounting or whatever. And it's like, okay. Okay. But these don't have to be the same company. part of my whole point with that. It's like, it's okay for you to have side passions. It's okay for you to have side brands. But just always remember that you are solving a problem for your customer in whatever brand that you're operating in. And they're not going to know to go to your accounting business for tennis lessons. And they're not going to know to go to your tennis business for accounting services. So there's a lot of times where it makes a lot of sense to separate those things. Ben and I could have just called this Fruitful Publishing and gone,
right.
He worked a lot on this and it would make sense, but we purposefully decided not to do that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say, is like, you know, it comes back to the old story brand, you know, saying of if you confuse, you lose. And I think one of the reasons why we didn't just have Fruitful Publishing is because people would start scratching their head like, wait, so Fruitful just publishes books now? Like, it, you know, you know, now we're getting requests of people, you know, like, it's important that you focus on what you do and that you keep those things separated, you know, where they make sense, because, you know, yeah, like doing that in one sense may have made sense, but like another sense, I think would have confused our audience even more about what Fruitful does.
Well, and I think too, I mean, there's definitely a world where Fruitful Publishing might exist, but the books that will belong under Fruitful Publishing are things about branding, are things about, you know, I was actually thinking the other day about writing a book called The Fruitful Way. You know, we had such a great response to our podcast about how we pivoted and the decisions that went into that. And, you know, there are some principles that we have used to lead this business for the last 10 years that are different. I mean, they're just dramatically different from the way that a lot of businesses operate. And I'd love for us to write that book. And that book would make sense under a Fruitful Publishing imprint. A book about grief that's a novel does not make sense under a Fruitful branding, Fruitful Publishing imprint. And so this needed its own spot and its own home for that. And I'm so, I will say, I'm just ridiculously spoiled as a person to have spent the last 10 years working with you and to have access to you in the course of my everyday life to get, like, this brand is way overbuilt for what most, like, indie author, first-time novelists get. And I just recognize how spoiled I am that I didn't have to go to Fiverr or draw something bad on my own or whatever to have something to slap on the corner of my book. But instead I got like a professional branding experience for somebody who, from somebody who I admire, beyond, you know, just anything. And I'm so, so stinking spoiled to have gotten that in this experience.
Well, happy birthday, Raj.
For many years, my dad always jokes about that with my mom. It's like the new water heater or something. It's like, well, there's your birthday and Christmas and next birthday or whatever. <It's> like, he never holds to it. Just, he's a very generous person, but he jokes about it though.
Well, Raj, thank you so much for hopping on here with me and, you know, kind of wrestling through some tough questions into your process behind the writing of your new book, and even into your own personal branding, the thoughts behind that. This has been a ton of fun for me. This has been a very rewarding, you know, project to work on with you. And I'm excited to do more of this kind of stuff, you know, in the future. But for those listening, you know, time is running out to get this book on pre-order. And remember, you know, if you pre-order this book, you know, before March 26, 100% of the proceeds of that goes to The Sharing Place. And that is the, you know, the nonprofit in Utah that inspired this book. And so please make sure you go to rajlula.com/book pre-order The Curing House today. It's on Amazon. And, you know, you'll be supporting a really great thing, and you'll be getting a great book. I'm so excited to get my hands on this as well.